Hello, and welcome to the Business of Information Security podcast with me, Gareth Becker. In this podcast, we chat to senior cybersecurity executives from a range of industries about their passions, experiences, and challenges. Without further ado, let's go ahead and dive straight into today's episode. Welcome to the pod, Gary. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yes, doing well, thank you. So thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited about the session today. It's an issue which I think is so relevant right now. You know, we've got 5G being rolled out and all kinds of things. So we're going to be talking today about the Internet of Things. And the title of today's podcast is My Neighbor Hacked My Toothbrush, and it's going to touch on a number of issues that I think are going to be very close to a lot of our listeners. I wanted to start off with a bit of an introduction about you, Gary. So you're the Deputy CISO at the University of Edinburgh. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about your role there and whether you're in an academic role there or a technical role or what your role at the University of Edinburgh is.
Okay, yes, that's correct. I'm the Deputy Chief Information Security Officer for the university. I work in what's known as professional services. So I'm part of Information Services Group, which provides IT support and infrastructure to the colleges. And it's the colleges that are the academics. So we're effectively in three colleges, the College of Medicine, Veterinary Medicine, Science and Engineering, and the Humanities, the Arts and Humanities College. So I sit within the Professional Services Group, providing a service to the entire university.
That's great. And so I understand this, the topic that we're discussing today, My Neighbor Hacked My Toothbrush. So I was wondering if you could tell me what the genesis of this idea was and how that came about.
Okay, yes. I joined a group known as the Cabaret of Dangerous Ideas. And essentially, it's a group of academics across the universities within Edinburgh who come together to provide, you know, to do public engagement, to provide a show, which typically goes out during the Edinburgh Festival in August, to members of the public. And the show is based on an aspect of their research or particular interest. And the idea is that you come up with an interesting slant, or if you like, a dangerous idea around your research topic in order to stimulate discussion and present that to the public. So although I'm not on the academic side, I still work for the university, so I was welcomed in. And I had this idea that the growth of devices, Internet of Things, within the home, has become a breeding ground for cyber criminals and so how we can attack. So the idea is that as we start to connect our homes, it's from a security perspective, it was really interesting because that's part of my job. And then it became more interesting with the pandemic because most of us moved home and started working remotely. So it became even more relevant. So that's where the kind of the idea started. And being the Cabaret of Dangerous Ideas, you have to have some sort of hook. And I had come up with all sorts of ideas, and the producer kept coming back and going, no, you've got to do better than that. It's got to be something that's going to catch people's imagination. And I think I've managed to do it with My Neighbour Hacked My Toothbrush, because it makes people think, what? You know, how did that happen? So yeah. So that's where it's come from.
Yeah, well, I think it definitely touches people in their own lives, you know, and I think it really highlights how, as a lot of these smart devices come into our homes, there are security aspects to that and privacy aspects to that that many people may not initially consider. I just wanted to kick off by asking you, you know, I think everyone's, you know, our listeners should be roughly familiar, but just in case. You know, there's lots of smart devices now, smart, you know, fridge, smart washing machine, etc. You know, so we have smart devices, but what is the Internet of Things?
Oh, Yeah, okay, that's a great question. I'll give you a little story, I suppose, because, you know, when you look at inventions over time, you know, history is full of light bulb moments. And, you know, humans have invented all sorts of stuff, and some good, some bad, and sometimes some inventions are used for good or bad. I mean, I'll give an example. 1903, the Wright brothers did the first manned flight. 1903. And by 1969, we were putting man on the moon. Now, that's astonishing when you think about it, that the progress that was made. Now, there's no argument to say that, yeah, we had two world wars and millions died, and that really, you know, pushed forward the development of manned flight as a result. But, you know, the good that came out of that eventually, you know, with the space program and all the inventions that came out of that, it was done for good, ultimately. And it's the same with the internet. You know, internet grew up, it became extremely widespread, but there's a dark side to the internet as well. And so for all the good that the internet has brought us in terms of connectivity and trade, there's still a dark side in terms of the internet and its use by people, particularly in certain aspects of social media. So, you know, that took us then to the Internet of Things, which is the next logical step. We've connected computers together, we've got all this communication going, and suddenly people thought, oh, wait a minute, maybe we can connect, you know, maybe we can put a chip into the cameras, for example, and heating and movement sensors. And then, you know, manufacturing industry began to pick up on this. And then suddenly the home market, the commercial market, became a thing. So we've suddenly seen those smart devices over the last couple of years, things like doorbells and fridges and kettles and light bulbs. And I thought I was on a talk the other day where there was the speaker had a smart coffee bean dispenser. So it was connected to the internet. And when the coffee beans reached a certain level, it automatically ordered up a replacement packet, which would then get delivered for her. And I thought, wow, that's just amazing, you know, that we've reached that stage. But with that, you know, with this drive towards smart homes, if you like, there's a downside, because, you know, people are you know. Do you know the book 1984 by George Orwell?
Yeah, I think, of course.
Big Brother is watching you, that kind of thing. Well, you know, George Orwell never foresaw that people would start voluntarily miking up their front rooms to the internet, for example, you know. And it's, you know, it's that type of thing that I think we've almost, you know, we've been sleepwalking into. It's this whole idea that we can, you know, doesn't matter what it is, we can actually connect. You know, we can connect all these kind of devices to the internet.
Yes, I totally agree, and it's fascinating actually, because I really like the 1984 reference. One of my favorite books, actually. I love George Orwell, but it seems to me almost 10, maybe even 10 or 15 years ago, if you'd told people that, you know, there were going to be cameras and microphones inside their house, which were transmitting, had the potential to listen to you and transmit information, I think everyone would have lost their minds. However, now we all love that. So I think something kind of curious there. Just as a side note, Wright Brothers' first flight happened right here in North Carolina, my host state. Yeah. We even have first in flight written on our number plates or license plates, say they call them.
Well, that's it. So you think of the technology and the rapid increase, you know, you know, 1903 to 1969, absolute night and day. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, when communications, the internet started, the early incarnations of it in the late 60s, and to what it's now become today. Mm-hmm. And then explosion in the last 5 years of connecting up our homes, what they call smart homes and smart cities.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm often asked, is that inevitable? And yes, it is. It is absolutely inevitable that this is the way that we are going. And, you know, IoT will impact how we get electricity, how you get your gas, you know, you know, street lights are managed, it's CO2 levels, temperature, humidity, ventilation, electricity consumption, water usage, control of flow of traffic and people, you know, and ultimately, you know, 24/7 access to services. You know, I can see, I see a situation where we are rapidly, you know, developing digital identities, and we're going to be using that for all of our lives in order to be able to connect and to use public services. So so it's inevitable, and it's happening, and it's happening right now. And as I say, when you come across things like, you know, I said the other day, I'd never heard of the coffee bean dispenser being connected to the internet, but, you know, that is the way it is. That's the way the world's the world's going. So I see it as inevitable. Now, Yeah.
So we've got, you know, homes connected, smart devices, smart cities are, you know, as you mentioned, inevitable, fast developing. What kind of security issues do you see with these developments?
Okay, there's two things here. There's certainly been reports this year about the possible dangers of cyber attacks in smart cities. It's you know, disruption. You may have seen the film Die Hard 4, for example, you know, in 2007, which, yes, it's a great film, totally over the top. We've got white hats, we've got black hats, we've got grey hats, we've got people, you know, hacking all some systems. We've got John McClane taking out a helicopter using a car, I think, actually, at the time. But the whole idea of the nation's infrastructure being brought down as a cyber attack was kind of encapsulated in that film. But yes, it was Hollywood, it was over the top, but there was certainly a lot of grains of truth within that scenario. And that has certainly led to, even just the last couple of months, the NCSC in the UK have actually published guidance on smart cities and kind of addressing the kind of thoughts and frameworks that people are going to have to use as these are developed. These are developed further. So I mean, there's the potential, you know. So if your traffic light system is run by, you know, and it's connected to the internet, and if it's possible to hack into that, you can imagine. I don't know what it's like where you are, but I know where I stay in central Scotland, when a small traffic light system within one of the towns or cities, if it goes on the blink, it's absolute chaos, you know. Now, you can imagine in the States, you know, with the huge freeways you've got and all the rest of it, like, you know, when big, you know, infrastructure routes break down, then it's complete chaos. And it's the same with signalling systems for railways, for example, or even, you know, God forbid, flight systems. So it's there's possibilities there. We've seen in South Africa, for example, the other year, so part of the electricity grid was brought down as a result of ransomware. So there's been examples already of, you know, small pockets of infrastructure have been affected in different parts of the world. So there is that there. And then, of course, in the US, you had the Colonial Pipeline attack back in May, which was described at the time as one of the most significant attacks against critical national infrastructure in history. And at one point, they reckoned that 45% East Coast supply was affected as a result of that attack. So, you know, it's real and it's happening now. And certainly the, you know, our people who are charged with are making every effort to protect infrastructure to the best of their capabilities. But it is an ongoing struggle. And it's something which we really can't take our eye off.
Yeah. As I mentioned, here in North Carolina on the east coast of the US, and yeah, we saw lines around the gas stations locally here, as people, as soon as you get that news that there might be some kind of, that's right, I heard it on the radio, and they said, this is happening, there has been effect on supply, but don't worry, you don't need to go out and panic buy gas. What's the first thing you do? Go immediately to the gas station and fill up your car.
Was that image that circulated of that lady filling up her boot? Was that faked up, or was that genuine? Was that somebody actually filling gas into bags and stuff?
I wonder that myself.
Was that real?
Sadly, I think it might have been real. But yeah, that's pretty terrifying. For sure. Now, you mentioned ransomware. There's been a lot in the news about that recently, and several major attacks, as you mentioned. When thinking about the Internet of Things specifically, is ransomware a concern? And do I need to worry about my neighbor or indeed anyone else turning my smart devices, indeed my toothbrush, against me?
Well, is ransomware a concern? Yes. I mean, ransomware has been the big news item in cyber over the last year. And certainly it's been high profile. It's attacked a number of major companies around the world. But I think it's important for people to appreciate that effectively any device can be held to ransom. Now, for a lot of IoT devices, they can just be bricked, but made inoperable. But your phone can be ransomware, for example. You know, it's got an operating system, you know, it's connected to the internet. So these kind of things can be attacked. And can be affected. And certainly the more sophisticated IoT devices are certainly vulnerable to this type of attack. So what we're seeing with ransomware generally is what we call human-led ransomware, which is essentially the cyber criminals make the effort of breaking into an organization first, attacking the critical infrastructure within it to try and disrupt the ability to restore, steal the data, then they encrypt it, then they ask for the ransom. And at that point, it's a kind of double whammy or even a triple whammy, because your ability to restore could have been affected, and they've also stolen your data anyway, you know, before they've encrypted it. But yes, could we ransomware your fridge or your washing machine or even your toothbrush? Possibilities are endless when you have chips and operating systems installed into devices. So never say never, but it's certainly a real possibility. And there's the disruption factor. So even if we can't actually do genuine ransomware attack on a certain device, there is certainly still the ability to disrupt it, or worse, to take it over and use it to spy on you.
Yes, and one of the terms that I've heard before is the botnet. And I know that's related to smart devices and the Internet of Things, but are there any particular security implications, that people should be aware of in terms of things in their own home? And, you know, what is the botnet and what is that used for?
Okay, well, I mean, a botnet is essentially a group of devices that are gathered together, that are compromised, and then they're used typically to do a denial of service attack against another computer system or company. So really a botnet is just a collection of devices that have been taken over, and sometimes they're sold as a collection on the dark web in order for cyber criminals to use to do their work. And the worry, of course, is that we've already seen that with cameras, for example, and their thousands have been taken over and used for that particular type of attack. So it's a real thing, and unfortunately, a huge number of cameras, for example, were released with the same software vulnerabilities, and then were installed in their thousands. And of course, you know, if one camera's got the vulnerability, they've all got it. And the danger, I think, there is that unless, you know, the manufacturers are brought to book on this, it's going to be a difficult challenge for us. Now, you know, at the end of the day, in looking at the home in terms of consumer products, the whole idea is that it's going to be, you know, manufacturers see this as a way of making money. So, you know, you get the device in, and then it will, for example, you know, if your fridge starts running out of milk, for example, it can order it up for you. Or if your washing machine has used so much washing powder, it can then order up a new thing. Now, that's all great in a sense. It's a good thing. And I'm also asked, you know, are there great benefits to all this technology? Well, for example, you know, people who are living on their own or potentially, you know, can live more independent lives as a result of this kind of technology. There's all that kind of good stuff. So I'm certainly not anti the IoT in the home. What concerns me is the security implications of this, and how, you know, and how we actually handle that as a society of consumers of this of these type of devices.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the security implications, and we certainly talked a lot about some of the dangers, and you definitely mentioned a couple of benefits there. But are there any other benefits to this technology? Any ways that it's going to affect our lives and what we're able to do outside of the kind of obvious ones?
As I say, I think, you know, I've read up on development of robotics, for example, and robots in the home, and that is certainly going to be something in the future. And again, you know, allowing people to lead more independent lives who may not have been able to do so without that technology and that assistive technology, it is going to be a great benefit. And it's like when I started this talk to be, you know, I talked about the good and the bad in terms of inventions, and you know, and manned flight being such a great thing, but it was used with devastating consequences during the wars, and then we got man on the moon, and you know, and that. So everything, there's always good and bad in everything. The danger, I think, that we're walking into here is what I've described as a digital dark age, that we don't know for sure, at least the consumers don't know for sure, what these devices are actually doing, what data is being collected by these devices, where that data is being sent to, and then for what purpose. And in a sense, you know, we are in a kind of surveillance society as it is, but the more things that we connect up in our homes, the bigger the danger is in terms of surveillance. And we're in a one-click culture. People just want to install stuff. The, you know, terms and conditions for a lot of popular apps on mobiles are longer than the first Harry Potter novel, for example, you know? It'll take you hours and hours to read through, even if you can understand them. And people just don't want to read all that stuff. They just want to click OK. You know, I'm going to give this device, you know, even an app on a mobile, I'm just going to give it permission to my camera and my microphone and my pictures and my contacts and all the rest of it and that, you know, because I just want to install it and get on with it. But at the same time, our smart homes are getting controlled by mobile devices, our mobile phones. So, you know, as I say to people, you know, locks, for example, smart locks, you know, we've had big bolts and stuff, you know, for thousands of years. Okay, they're not always perfect, you know, they always keep people out, but they're not bad, and they work most of the time, you know. But the idea of protecting your home with an electronic lock which is controlled by a smartphone over the internet from a hacker perspective, and I've trained as an ethical hacker, that's just frightening. It really is frightening. And you know, I'm starting to think, you know, are we sleepwalking into this? Is society really sleepwalking into this? Are we ready for this, you know, as human beings? Because it's a frightening prospect. So on the one hand, it's great and there are lots of benefits to it, and I get that. But unfortunately, there is a kind of dark side to this. And it's partly because we are in a one-click culture. People don't want to think about it. It's all this security versus convenience, you know, versus privacy.
And yes.
How much data are you willing to give up in order to enter this brave new world that we're now going into?
Yes. And it is terrifying when you put it that way, for sure. And I think a lot of the time, if people have bought a device or paid for something, you know, they're hardly going to turn, you know, decide to give it back because they didn't like something in the terms and conditions. But I'm really interested in that phrase that you just used, the digital dark age. I just wanted to ask you what your where you came up with that idea or what that means to you.
I'm sure it's not my phrase. I'm trying to think where it came up from. So I'll probably Google that later, but I certainly read it before. A digital dark age is an expression which really refers to the fact that there is so much data being collected by people, a lot of it given up voluntarily. But at the same time, a lot of it given up because they just don't realise that they're giving it up. I'll give you a good example. I mean, there's been research being done. I've forgotten who did the research, but it came out of Cambridge in about 2011, 2012. And at one time, people did, you could do psychological questionnaires for people in order to determine what sort of their personality type was. And then they found that, I wonder if we can do that just by analysing what people like on Facebook. And it turned out they could. So you can profile people quite accurately just by what they like on Facebook and how they behave. Now you start taking that to its extreme. The level of profiling that now goes on people in terms of what they like, what they look at, what they browse through, can tell you exactly what that type of person is like. And from that, you can then infer. Now, the digital dark age is where that data that's been collected about you is then being used and matched with other data sets about you. And then there's inferences made about you saying, well, you like this and you like that, so you're probably going to like this and like that as well. Now, from a consumer perspective, that's possibly great because you get, you know, the what people see about that is they get adverts on their phone or say, oh, you know, you like this and you might like this. Oh, that's great. You know, I never thought about buying that, so I'll get it. And people like that kind of thing. But the dark side of that is you don't know what data is being collected on you. You don't know what inferences are being made. And you don't know how you're being categorized, you know? And that's the worry. Because if you start to take that to logical conclusion and people start to believe the computers and the data without actually engaging common sense, then that is a real danger. That is a real danger because, you know, insurance companies may look and say, actually, we think, you know, given your behavior on the internet, you could be considered a bad risk as a driver, for example, you know, so therefore your insurance premiums are going to go up, you know, and that's all just because of an inference that's been done. And there's a big worry about this, about how as a society we are going to cope with all this data and then what inferences are going to be made for us and what is our access to that data, you know. You know, under GDPR, we've got the right to see data and to have it removed and all the rest of it, but it's incredibly difficult. And a lot of this data, people have already agreed to it. And I don't think, as a society, it is right that, you know, people clicking OK on a mobile app, I don't think that is OK to then take their data because you've clicked OK and agreed to the terms and conditions. Because burying all these terms and conditions in hundreds of pages, I don't think that's consent. But it's the way the world is working at the moment. You clicked OK, you installed it, you said it was fine for us to take your contacts and share them with other people, you know? And you go, well, I didn't read that, you know? So it's that kind of thing. And this is what I talk about, a dark age, you know? And in a sense, for want of a better expression, genie's out of the bottle. It's not going back in anytime soon. And so I think that's, hopefully that describes, I'm not sure if I described that perfectly, but that's how I see a digital dark age. We don't know what the data is. We don't know where it's going. We know some of the uses have been put to it, but we don't have the whole picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's such a deep topic. And I really think that your insight there about consent is fascinating. And I'm sure that this will get wrangled in the courts in one way or another eventually. But it just triggered a memory, actually, which is just roughly related. But I remember back in the mid, I guess it must have been around the mid 2000s, I guess Google published a whole bunch of Google search data into the public domain. And they quote unquote anonymized it by removing IP addresses and any account details. But what they didn't take into account is people Google their own name all the time. And they also, you know, they treat search engines almost they'll tell them the absolute truth to Google. They will type in their deepest, darkest secrets into Google. With things that you would probably never say to another human being, you will quite happily type into Google. So, and when you think about that,
can I ask you a question there? If you type into the search engine in Google and then you change your mind and delete it before you hit enter, has it gone to Google?
Oh, that's a fascinating question.
I think it has.
Mm.
I certainly bet it has. So as soon as you start typing, Google's collecting that information. So you can just say, oh, actually, I really don't want that in my search history. It's too late.
There you go. Top tip there for our listeners.
I think that's the case, actually. And, you know, maybe someone will come back and correct me on that one. But I have heard that.
Wow. Definitely something to be aware of.
And I heard it from another researcher. So it's probably right. But, wow. But yeah, but that's the thing. Again, that's back to terms and conditions.
Yeah.
You know, I use Google. And I use other search engines too. But it's one of those things. But yes. And again, there was one company a few years ago, I believe, actually started pushing purchases of people to their friends and relations and contacts. Because, no, so-and-so bought this, you might like to buy that. So you can imagine that what the fuss that was kicked up over that, it was pulled extremely quickly.
Yeah, I bet.
I wouldn't like to say which company it was. I've got an idea which company it was, but I won't say here. You can just imagine the thought of that. It's just,
Yeah. Just to return back to the subject of IoT, do you have any examples of times when IoT has been hacked and any effects from that?
Yes, I mean, there's been many, many cases. And the worry is as well, of course, it's not just IoT in the home. We've seen, implantable cardiac devices and pacemakers being vulnerable to hacking. As recently as 2017, we've seen, children toys, the dolls being open to attack, smartwatches, smart speakers, all of them at one point or another have been, have had to have updates pushed to them because of security implications of the smart speakers that people put in the front rooms and talk to. Smart TVs have been hacked, smart vacuum cleaners, coffee machines, heating, the air conditioning systems and buildings. There was a smart home in Milwaukee, I remember, which was hacked, So the hackers started playing loud music to them and talking to them via their cameras and putting the temperature up to 90 degrees. And so there's all that kind of stuff. You almost name the device, it's been done. There's even cranes, I remember, as well, which, and certainly in this country, it was shown that on building sites, that the protocols that were used could be compromised. And some of the famous ones are, the car wash attack. You can Google that if you like, the car wash was connected to the internet and was taken over. And the fish tank, in a casino in Las Vegas that was done the other year. Someone thought it was a great idea to connect a fish tank up to the internet. And they were hacked via I think it was a thermometer. So they could, basically so they could watch the fish and temperature and the feeding and all that kind of stuff, But again, the hackers managed to hack into that and then get onto the casino network. And so there's a good article about that. Now, the thing is, for all these type of hacks, lots of patches and fixes have been applied. And a lot of them are down to weak passwords and not having multi-factor authentication on them. And I think the problem here is it's just manufacturers rushing to market and getting them out there and getting them in without really paying too much attention, because there isn't the regulation there at the moment for them to actually make their products secure. So you name it, it's been compromised at one time or another over the last 5 years, and things are improving. I think things are improving, but there's been lots and lots of examples. So you can just go on your favourite search engine and search for IoT hacks or IoT or the worst IoT disasters of 2021, and there's a whole list of them there. So.
I don't know if I'll sleep soundly at night if I do that, but I do feel I have to ask, did the fish make it out alive?
Yeah, I believe so. I think I don't think any fish were harmed in that hack. It's not the case, actually. I recall, I believe the casino lost money as a result of the hack. Again, it's documented on, there's papers written by the pen test company. discovered that.
Mm.
It is one of my favourite ones.
So we're coming up on time, so I don't want to take you too long, but I'm wondering if you have any advice for our listeners who are considering buying smart devices. Perhaps they already have smart devices. Are there any things that homeowners or renters or anyone should be doing?
Good. Okay. What I would say is, from my perspective, non-participation is not an option. Okay, there's no turning back. It's the way we're going. It's the way the world's going. So me as a security professional, I have to embrace it. You know, it worries me. It keeps me up at night, but I still have to get on with it. And the problem is, you purchase devices, other, you know, exploits can be discovered on those devices after purchase, and they can become vulnerable. So what I would say is that, you know, make sure that if you can't update the software or the passwords or the firmware for these devices, you shouldn't install them. That's it. It should be able to change default passwords and use unique passwords and always patch them with latest software vulnerabilities. And if the devices that you're buying cannot be patched or updated after the event, then don't install them. Secondly, I would ask for people to do your homework. Read reviews online, check to see what others are saying. Find out, is it collecting data? And if it is, where is it being stored and for what purpose? You know, is your device, are they listening to you? Are they recording you? You know, is your camera sending, you know, data out every time you go in and out your house? Is it actually sending that movement off to a remote server someplace for whatever reason? So just check to see what it is and check to see what other people are saying about it. And don't buy the cheapest. I know you like a bargain, but there's a reason it's cheap, okay? It's cheap because it was put together quickly and it's gone out to market and the manufacturer not really bothered at that point, as long as they got your money. So, you know, look for well-known trusted brands. Never reuse the same password for anywhere. And if you can do multi-factor authentication for your devices, then turn that on as well. And think what happens, you know, if I'm buying something, what happens if it becomes vulnerable? What's the company going to do about it? What did they say on their website? Because you don't want to be in a situation where you suddenly find that you have a vulnerable device, you spent a bit of money on it, and the only thing you can do is replace it with something else. You don't want to get into that type of situation because that's not right. And I would ask the question as well, you know, do all your devices need to be smart internet connected? Do you really need an internet kettle? You know, maybe you do. And that's great if you do. I've no problem with that. But, you know, just think about it. You know, do you really want to control your kettle from an app? You know, I'm not going to tell you what the default password is because you can look it up on the internet. And the fact is that, you know, it will store your Wi-Fi key in plain text. And hackers have managed to boil these things dry so they explode and burst into flames. And you do pay lots of money for these things as well, these kettles. But, you know, you've got to think, you know, is it a reliable brand? Have they sorted out the security? And do I really need it? You know, will my life be, you know, radically altered if I get a, you know, an internet-enabled toothbrush or an internet slow cooker or one of those things? So that's what I would say. And protect your router, your home router. Make sure you change the default passwords. Make sure it's something strong. And that's the important thing as well, because that's the thing that's sitting between you and the internet and the bad guys. So make sure you know what your router password is. Make sure it's been changed from the default and it's a really strong one to make it uncrackable. And that would be my advice.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a fascinating conversation. A pleasure to have you on the pod. So thanks very much. Yeah, we'll hope to talk to you again sometime.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. We hope you enjoyed that episode of the Business of InfoSec podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you're currently listening to make sure you get our latest episodes. Plus, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a review. As always, you can find us and engage with us on social media, as well as on the Business of InfoSec website, where you can find this podcast, as well as other topical articles, reports, and videos. So, until next time, take care.